Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Live from Bates Nursery and Garden Center, just north of Briley Parkway on Whites Creek Pike, and worth the drive from anywhere. It's the At Home Show, answering your questions about your home, your garden, and your projects. Now for two gentlemen best known for pioneering the concept of social distancing, Josh Carey and David Bates.
Uh-oh, everybody knows what that music means. It's now time to climb a tree, don your loincloth, and survey the backyard, because it's Saturday morning. It's time for the At Home Show with Josh Carey and David Bates. I'm Josh Carey.
I'm David Bates.
That's Michael Stevenson.
He's back.
I'm back.
He is back. He was actually, you were away, but you were.
He was a roving reporter.
He was.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
And who is upon the hot seat?
We are very fortunate today to have Randall Lance. What is your official title with Metro Parks, Randall?
The official title?
Get up on that mic there.
The official title, Superintendent of Horticulture.
Superintendent of Horticulture for Metro Parks and Recreation. That's right. So we're very grateful to have Randall on board this morning. And that gives us a whole host of different things that we can talk about, because Randall's job title might be fairly succinct. His duties are wide and ranging, and there's a lot going on in Metro Parks and Recreation, and there's a lot going on in horticulture, because there are pests that are already here that we're going to be dealing with. So, well, no, not
why
my,
are you
not,
pointing me, yo?
Not that one. A different pest. But
it's going to be kind of a yucky
day
out there, David.
Yeah, today is, of course, Saturday. We've got a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms today, mainly after 9 a.m. It's going to be mostly cloudy with a high near 87 degrees. Winds out of the southwest at 5 to 15 miles an hour with gusts as high as 20 miles an hour. So if you've got trash cans or umbrellas up or whatever, just be advised tonight, 40% chance of showers.
Trash cans up?
Well, you make sure your lids are on there.
Oh, okay.
You don't want all the trash getting scattered away. 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight, mostly cloudy, and it's going to be dark, with a low of about 70. Winds out of the south-southwest at 5 to 10 on Sunday. Showers and thunderstorms are likely, especially in the afternoon after 2 p.m., mostly cloudy, with a high near 90 degrees. Winds will be out of the west-southwest at 5 to 10 miles an hour. There is a 60% chance of precipitation on Monday. There is some chance, but it's very little of thunderstorms on Monday, or really any rain. This looks like the one day going forward that we will not be having precipitation to deal with next week, which almost certainly means we will have it. Because every other day of the week, you see Tuesday, Wednesday, and we go through Thursday, Friday, say it's every other day. So I'm going to say we get rain on Monday, and it doesn't rain the rest of the days. But there's no huge amount. That is to say that, as is usual for summertime in this part of the country, we've got rain in the forecast every day. I think that may be the odds of it are probably statistically increased a bit due to this huge dust cloud that's moving over from the Sahara Desert. So it's that's definitely happening, and it's going to be a little should be, if we get to see any sunrises or sunset, it may actually,
it should be absolutely spectacular. Folks.
Is it?
I'm,
should be.
When's it supposed to get here?
Oh, there's someone at my side door.
was about to say, where the wind chimes.
And temperature currently is 76 degrees here in the Music City at Bates Nursery.
So when's the dust thing supposed to get here?
It's supposed to be arriving this weekend. I don't know.
All right, because I was thinking about that. When I was coming in, I thought the sky looked just a little bit different. Yeah. So, like, well, not, I don't know how to describe, almost like a little yellowish tinge.
I'm not going to say that some of it hasn't already arrived, but there's so much cloud cover today, it's hard to discern.
Oh, it's 5 miles up or something, too. So it's it would be above the clouds, obviously, but...
So, Randall.
Yes.
Welcome.
Well,
glad you're here today.
Glad to be here.
For those who may have driven up and down West End, you can hardly do that without giving a glance over up towards the Parthenon in Centennial Park and a whole lot of fences.
It's hard to see the Parthenon right now.
It really is difficult. Yeah. I've tried to drive up and around. You really can't. Mm-hmm. There's construction all around all the sides that faces West End. So it's very much sequestered off, as it should be, because there's construction going on. You can get around to the opposite side of the Parthenon, and you can park over there, and it's still open.
Still open, yeah. Everything's still open.
But the much of the park itself is actually shut down. So what's going on? I mean, what is this of your doing?
No, it's not of my doing. No. It's been painful. I mean, for those of us who have been around a long, long time, you know, you get into your established routines and established ways.
Right.
Now we can't drive through, nor can we. And the front flower beds, as we call them in West End, are gone.
Oh,
they're just gone. When this thing is finished, the whole project started out as a way to drain the front lawn. The front lawn of the Parthenon always held water, so we had events. It was sloppy. How many times have you been to the craft show and had mud up to your knees?
Right, because the water just perks straight down. Yeah. It doesn't really run off.
And
It
does. And closer to the Parthenon you got, the wetter it was. So it was a drainage thing. And then the master plan for the park called for this to be a formalized space. And then the other thing that sort of happened that's kind of interesting is the Women's Suffragette celebration that's coming up in August. A group, and I should know this who it is, but they got together and they had a monument made. And the determination was to put the monument in Centennial Park. And so those of you who know what the John Thomas Monument is, which is the sort of the big monument to the west front, the southwest side of Centennial Park. So the Suffragette Monument will mirror that now on the northeast side.
Okay.
So it and then the sidewalks will radiate from those down toward the West End to the cross street that's always there. And so it'll be very formalized. And then there'll be a double row of alley of trees on both sides. I think it's 112, 120 5-inch trees, which are, by the way, across the road over here, going in, hopefully starting in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, they're not coming from Bates
Nursery,
by the way. These are for a landscape contractor who is going to be doing the work, Lee Greathouse and Greathouse. So great folks, but they've been storing the trees at their warehouse facility and shop across the road from
across the road.
Yes.
So there'll be a double row of trees. So it's going to be a very formalized space. Now, the trees that are there, they're going to stay there. Now, we have to say that we're losing a couple of those now. I think that drought in September that where we couldn't irrigate because all the irrigation's been turned off, we had some pretty substantial damage to some of the trees, not just those, but others. But and then that gets done. The Suffragette Monument gets placed. There is a celebration, was a celebration planned in August. Something's going to happen. Of course, we're running behind because we've two things.
A little something going on in town.
Something going on in town. But the wet weather was that. And then we had a whole lot more rock than anybody thought. So they spent a lot of time breaking whole rocks to put in 5-inch trees.
Yeah, that's surprising because
it's a huge amount of rock.
Yeah. Apparently, sometime in the past, during one of the centennials or something, that a lot of soil got excavated away because I live not far from there, and those who live in the Richland neighborhood, didn't call it Richland, for it was rich land, almost no rock at all, very good topsoil. So
this is deep rock. I mean, this is big, huge shelf rock that you get, so that could excavate. So we're down, I don't know if you call it bedrock, but and then
close
of course
to
some
it.
Of that is almost like foundation stuff from the centennial.
Yes.
But anyway, so that's
it wasn't Josh that time.
No, it was not.
No,
me.
It was me.
So, anyway, so that's going on, and then the whole front lawn gets sodded, which will make a thing, and we get the Parthenon's getting new lights.
Now, the driveway that has always come in off of West End, will that be restored in some
it
fashion?
It will be restored in a one-way in fashion.
So you'll drive in?
You will go to the left. You will go to the west.
Okay.
Work your way around. There will be additional parking added as you go around to the Parthenon, and then you will have to exit the park at one of the other exits.
On like 25th
yes.
or...
25th, or there's an exit up to 31st. In the back, there's Park Plaza. You can exit off there. So it'll be a one-way through. And then the whole idea of this around the band shell, there's another entrance that will come in off that, what we call the bridge entrance, and where the little ship's bow is.
Right.
That will enter up to the way I understand it now. This is what I think's happening, up to the band shell. And so for event use, people will take their stuff and park there and then take their things out onto the lawn, and hopefully they will carry them out onto the lawn and not drive out there. So it's a big thing. A lot of it is, again, what people you'll hear people say this all the time, it's infrastructure. You're not going to see it because
right.
a lot of it is piping, huge drainage pipes underground, huge drainage pipes. So,
and there's also electrical conduits and cabling.
Electrical conduits, and you've got lights, which you've also
irrigation.
Got. Huge yeah. irrigation systems. So brand new irrigation systems. All of that's underground, you're not going to see. But it's set up so events can be better. The drainage will be better. It formalizes the space. The turf will be able to be maintained. It will be Bermuda.
Right.
So it will be tougher turf, but I think I don't know if we're going to, hopefully we'll be overseeding it in the winter. The front entrance flower beds are gone. The designers have put in another little strip border that will go the length. It won't be in the center. It'll be off to the side. And right now, it's all these things that you're seeing in front of us here. It's all perennials and shrubs and that sort of thing. Now, we probably are going to alter that because I don't think the national public will understand when you've got red twig dogwood in the summertime. It doesn't look like anything.
Yeah, why do they put them awful things in there? Because they're not red in the summertime right. is the point.
Right.
They're only not, red when cold weather. And that's only the growth from the previous year.
Right, and if they're pruned correctly.
If they're, you got to prune them, cut them yeah. back hard every year. For those of you who have red twig dogwoods or yellow twig, you know that. You got to cut them back hard every year to get that new growth so that you have that color that you desire in the next season.
All righty, folks. If you want to ask Randall any questions, I mean, he's here for us. We can take your calls at 615-499-6690. And then Michael will take a look at it. And if it's a voicemail that we can play on the air without any bad words or anything like that,
yeah.
we'll go ahead and play it that way. But if you want us to call you back, we will do so too.
Yeah, by the way, if you're watching us on Facebook, please share
yep.
this out there. And it's sitting out on the At Home Show with Josh Carey and David Bates Facebook site. It's also over on the Bates Nursery site and Earth Mix site.
It is up live on Twitter at the Bates Nursery.
On our YouTube channel. So if you go over there, please subscribe and you'll get a notification when we go live on the air. Randall, what were the kinds of trees that you're going to be planting, the 120 trees?
Well, it's interesting. I don't know if you all watch Volunteer Gardener much
yes,
on
so
public
yeah.
television. And last week they did an old show. It was from Long Hollow Nursery.
Right.
I forgot our friend's name over there. But anyway, he's a landscape architect. And he was saying he was the whole time he was in landscape architecture school, they talked about native plants, native plants, native plants. Those of us in the landscape businesses, we like native plants, but we know there's a whole lot more than native plants.
And just because something's not native doesn't mean it's not a good choice.
Right.
Or that it has negative attributes.
We would all love to have live oaks there, but I don't know that we would be real successful.
And they are native to yes. the southeast.
Yes. Yeah.
Now,
so anyway,
the trees that we're going to have along there are going to be...
What I'm saying, they're out, so the designers only wanted native plants. So right now there's like five different kinds of oaks. They're hickories.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I believe, some big leaf magnolia. There's at the Suffragette Monument, they're going to use some... Magnolia microphylla.
Right. Which are the... Even the acuminata has really big leaves
right.
on the cucumber magnolia. But these are... For those of you who don't know, these are deciduous types of magnolias.
What do they
the big leaf magnolias, they literally have leaves that are this big.
Yeah.
And they're, They don't call them big leaf for nothing. And macrophylla means big leaf is what that means.
And the reason I use it because the suffragette, apparently the vote was, if you would, the vote was yellow, a yellow rose. Okay. And so the flowers are yellowish when they bloom. They're not yellow yet, but they're yellowish. I believe I'm right. There was some idea, some things of switching that one to a different magnolia. But anyway, so it's native trees, and they're big. So when they go in, they'll be good size.
Now, do they have the beautiful magnolia smell on these big ones?
No.
Now, one of the things that they did not choose, Randall, as a native tree, and it is native, are ash trees.
They did not choose ash trees. Actually, you'd be surprised. Actually, there was some ash trees in the planting plan because this planting plan was done probably 4 years ago.
So that was really before there was a lot of thought given in our area to this pest right here. You see, emerald ash borer. And if you have ash trees in your yard, the good news is you can save them and you can keep them, but you can't do it without taking some really serious action. Unfortunately, all the trees that are growing natively and wild that are don't receive a systemic, an ongoing systemic chemical treatment for emerald ash borer, they're going to die.
Well, I mean, we
they already are gone in Michigan. This is where they started from, right?
You know, someone's always pointing, well, there may be that one, and there will be that one, and we hope there are that one, but
we need a resistant.
Right. And everything we know about it is that 99.9% of the ash trees will die if they're not treated. And it's almost too late right now to start treating. You have to start early, but you have to get ahead of the borer.
You should have been treating a couple of years ago.
Or at least a year ago.
Yeah.
And then it's every other year for some things. It's every year for some products. You have to, and it's hard to do. I mean,
and it's not cheap either.
It is not cheap. No, it is not cheap.
And you would need to treat them for many years ongoing until all the other trees have died out and the emerald ash borers have simply died off or moved off because there's no more ash trees.
Right.
So you would have to. So you probably have to treat it, I would say, a minimum of 5 years, would you know?
Oh, a minimum, yeah. Even longer than that, probably. I think that long.
And you can't afford to take a chance because, you know, if you do it a year too soon, it's dead anyway. You've thrown all that money and all that effort away. So
the thing is, we've been talking about this for a good 8, 9, 10 years now.
Yeah.
Maybe not 10, but a long time. And it's here. We're seeing... You'll see your ash trees, and ash tree leaves are bipinnate.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So they look like, if you know what a walnut tree looks like, they sort of look
similar,
like a walnut tree.
Yeah.
They start thinning in the top. You'll see the crown, the canopy start kind of getting thin, and then the next year they'll be a lot more thin, and usually by the third year they're dead.
Right.
And then within 3 years they're going to fall. Because something about the way this insect deals with the wood, it causes the wood to get brittle, and then they just, in a little windstorm, they just fall over. Those of you with your yard, it's tough.
Anybody who's ever used a wooden baseball bat would know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because you can't catch it just right spot.
Yeah, ash is it's a very pretty wood, isn't it?
Very pretty,
But it's also, it's not the hardest of woods either, so it's... As soon as the inner bark layer, the cambium layer, is eaten up, you know, all of the ability for the tree to transmit water and nutrients up the tree is removed. Right. And so death will occur. It's not maybe. As I understand, it was been 15 to 20 years ago that some kind of packing material got into Michigan, and that's where they got introduced, and now they're working their way All directions.
So we've spent quite a lot of money doing an inventory, which seems stupid that we'd spend money on the inventory, that we should be probably doing something other than. But it was to give us sort of an idea to say to our officials, this is real. Warner Park alone, right now we have counted, and we've had a company do this, we've got 7,000 ash trees that we've counted. And we're only counting what's along paths and trails and picnic shelters and things. So that's the only thing we're counting. Warner Park has got the largest percentage of those right now. Warner Park is going to be really not devastated, but it's going to have a lot of
things. You're going to be a noticeable reduction.
Right, and there are places in Warner Park where there are populations, and that's all there are. It's in this area that's nothing but ash trees.
Maybe it's an opportunity to reintroduce some grasslands and some pastures and some things like that.
And the naturalists are very into that. Then making, but we want people to understand that when we don't clean all this up, we may get it off the path, but we're going to let it fall. We're going to let it lie on the side. We're not going to clean everything up. Now, if you're in Centennial Park or if you're in Morgan Park, yes. But if we're in a natural park, Beeman, Bell's Bend, all of those parks, we're going to, it's going to be a natural thing that happens.
Okay, what's the rule of thumb as far as, you know, obviously parks like Warner Parks have extensive hiking trails and all that, and so they're, I'm sure there's some action being taken to clear a certain distance away, has to do with the height of the tree.
Yeah, and again, we're only counting things that could be a target. In other words, they're going to fall on a path. There'll be some activity.
So you've only counted trees that are on paths? That's the 7,000 number you're talking about?
Yeah.
That's not all the trees. That's just the ones that people might walk past. And of course,
targets.
And that's what
I mean, we've done like 15, I'm at 30 parks.
And those ash trees can create what we refer to as a widowmaker event. They just simply fall without warning. Right. And if you're in the wrong spot at the wrong time, somebody survives you, but not you.
Well, has anyone talked about any kind of a reclamation of the trees that died?
The wood's not very good, apparently.
Well, and the reason I bring that up, Randall, is that in another life, I sell a little bit of wood products.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, wow. Who knew?
Many, many years ago, there was a borer that got into the Western Canada and to the Western forests out there, into some of the, I believe it was the lodgepoles and some of the pines that were out there that grow in forests, and it killed thousands and hundreds of thousands of acres of these pine trees. That product has now, it stood in the fields and in the forest there for many years, and it become blue stain through the natural stuff. They've harvested that, and it has now made its way back into the market in Middle Tennessee, and it is absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. You know, that one piece may be smooth, the next piece may look like a Swiss cheese, but it has a natural finish that when you put just a clear coat on it, it's absolutely wonderful. And I can see maybe some sort of a reclamation of some sort.
I think you'd have to be pretty proactive in taking the trees down before they fall. Because by the time they fall, there's already a lot of decay has already occurred.
Right. The other thing is finding somebody to do the work, the reclamation.
Logging ain't cheap.
Well, and
there's not anybody out there buying up stands of forest anywhere and offering to come in and get your hardwoods.
Oh, no.
Come on, David. I mean, you know.
We had a rather large oak fall at McCabe Park. We had the tornado, and then we had two straight line wind events. So we've been busy. We still haven't cleaned all that up. It's a huge, because we got some federal help for the tornado, but nothing for the straight line winds. And we had almost as much damage to the straight line winds as we did with the tornado. So we had a gentleman who wanted to get a log from the McCabe thing and use it to, actually he was making a guitar out of it. Well, so he was, you know, we said, you know, we can't give it to you, but, you know, well, you know, I'm not going to stand in your way if you don't come get it. We don't talk about that. I'm not on the, nobody's hearing this.
No.
There's nobody there to see it when the tree fell.
But he was going to get some logging company to come and get it for him. And then he called me and he said, I can't afford it. You know, it was just thousands of dollars. So we cut it in small pieces and moved it to the back lot. But if we could find somebody who was into that business who would do it, you know, I'm sure we could. Yeah, we'll work with them on that. Love to. And it's going to be there's going to be many, many opportunities.
In those opportunities, as you said, there's a lot of liability issues that have to be dealt with. So it's just the nature of it. It's some danger involved with the work, and you've got to close off a lot of areas while people are working around it. So it's a lot logistically to sort through.
And chipping it is a good way. Apparently, chipping it, putting it through a tub grinder, will get rid of the bore. So that's a good way of, you know, just.
And all
it's
that
a little late
be,
to stop now, but
all that can be composted.
Yes,
and used
for mulch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So compost your bugs, huh?
If somebody told me, I'm taking a little side thing here, but I got sort of jumped on about cutting a tree for the Metro Christmas tree. And what do you do with it after it's over? And I said, well, we compost. I mean, we take it in, we turn it into mulch. Well, that's not a good use. Well, I think it's a really pretty good use. But
what did they want you to do with it?
Well, they don't want me to do it at all.
Have a Christmas tree. Oh, okay.
That we should plant one. It's hard to plant one on the top of a parking garage on a plaza. But
really,
we always
concrete's not that nutritious.
I use my little soapbox here. One year in my 23 years, have we asked, well, actually, we've done this about 20 years. If I ask somebody for a tree, and, you know, because we've always had people call us and donate one. And we didn't pay for it. We just said, would you ever consider? And they said, yeah, God, could you take that? It's too big for my house.
Yeah, they'll come.
So we were looking for trees that are too big. And usually, if you really look at those trees hard, you'll find a hole in the back, or there'll be you'll see where we've wired in branches to make it be symmetrical.
Yeah, it works for a Christmas tree, but it's not necessarily a beautiful landscape item.
That's exactly right. And so we get the trees, and it saves. I mean, it used to these people, it would cost $1,000 to take a tree down out of their
easily,
yard. And so we save them money. We plant a tree back for them. They're happy. You know, we get a tree. We're happy. But a lot of people don't understand. They think we're just ruining the environment by cutting these trees. But we make mulch out of it.
So
mulch
is a good thing. No, we're not just ruining the environment. We're actually doing some good things along the way as well.
But mulch is a good thing. Right, Dave?
It's very beneficial.
Right.
And on that point, let's stop for just a minute. We'll talk about EarthMix Garden Products. And Randall was out last week. It's a great segue for him. Thank you. Your timing is perfect. I gave Randall a little tour around the EarthMix facilities.
Amazing.
And what we do as far as our composting efforts and how we do a very systematic, very recipe-oriented blend of materials or inputs to make our supernatural compost. And that supernatural compost is a standalone product, obviously, and it is a principal component of some other mixes down the line. So it's just one of the things that EarthMix Garden Products we try to do to differentiate what we have to sell from what others sell. And it's all about having success in gardening. And it's one thing to be organic, it's another thing to do it sustainably, but to do that with the goal in mind of having the most prolific and productive soils and mediums and amendments is yet a very different thing. So that's the actual goal. The litmus test is in how do plants perform when they are planted in the materials or if they are used as amendments. And the results are in. EarthMix performs extremely well. And, you know, I grew up growing plants with my grandmother back from a child, and so the use of native soils as some of the blends adds a lot to the characteristics of for outdoor growing medias. So whether you use EarthMix Garden or Proganics O, or for that matter any of the complete line of EarthMix products, just remember this: success in gardening begins at the ground level when you use EarthMix Garden products. And you can find EarthMix by going to the website earthmix.net, and just click on the Find EarthMix tab right there, and then you'll see all of the locations will come up all around Middle Tennessee, Kentucky, or also in Indiana and Ohio, and you never know where we're coming to next. So check it out, earthmix.net.
All righty, folks, 615-499-6690. David, would you go to HDMI3 for me real quick?
I will do that.
Absolutely. We've got a new toy, so we're going to try to do this on the air. But folks, reach out. Call us if you got questions about it. This is the blue stained pine that I was telling you about.
Yeah, nice.
Isn't that absolutely gorgeous in this application, the way that they pulled it up? But, you know, it's not going to be for everybody. But, I mean, it is an absolutely fantastic-looking product.
That's obviously a very rustic setting there that they're creating.
It
works well.
What's that going to be?
That is a restaurant out in West Tennessee that we got the order from. And this was just the beginning portion of it. He was so impressed with the product, he called back and got about another load of it. So everything was great. But, again, with the nature of what the trends are with the designs, wood is coming back. I mean, everything's not going to have to be painted white or beige.
Or metal. Metal thing.
Well, he's got a mixture of everything in there. It's a Fenganish way. You got some stone.
Dare I say, it reminds me of using pallets, but it's better looking.
Well, and pallets,
that pallet wood thing bothers me.
Everything tends to be like 42 inches wide.
Well, it's soft wood. It's not going to last.
In an interior application like what we're talking about here, I mean, there's all kinds of uses for all the species of wood.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is great, yeah.
Generally speaking, though, I'm with you. The best use for a used pallet is to fix it up and reuse it
as a pallet.
As a pallet.
That's what we do.
But this is the look that the pallet they seem to be going for with the palette.
Well, again, you got that you've got
the rustic look.
Now, this is a non-traditional type of use. Yeah. Now you can see he's got metal roofing on the inside of the restaurant.
Okay, I thought that was where he hadn't gone down yet.
That's a design.
That's
criteria.
Where it's going to stop.
Oh,
they've got the stone.
Is this going to be a barbecue joint? Because that's the vibe I'm getting.
I don't know what their cuisine is, but I believe it's
more
of a
meat. Hungry.
I like it on the diagonal over there. I think that's the diagonal use.
Well, see, what they
really
did
great.
Is they picked and chose as they went through here, and, I mean, that was sold in long lengths. I mean, it didn't all come in four-foot lengths. It's just the way that it works out that way. And they took the time to take and create that pattern. It's almost like they're building painting on that wall by designing the way that things matched up there with it. But the diagonal is striking. It's just absolutely spectacular.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's if you like that kind of stuff. So maybe the ash borer may have some sort of a benefit at some point.
Well, I guess it's theoretically possible. I would have thought that might have been discovered, whatever that benefit is, in the 15 years prior. Yeah. But then again, perhaps they weren't looking for it back in the day. So one thing for sure is that it still is decent firewood. You could cut it up and burn it, you know. And
you don't want to burn pallets necessarily, though. There's some of them in here, and we don't sell pallets as a product, but I understand that some of them have a bit of a chemical treating to them to resist some of the stuff.
Yeah, you don't want to be sticking that in the fireplace at the house.
They have to be fire treated if they're going to be shipped over street across the world, and so it's not for me. And again, but if you're going to hey, let's make lemonade if you have to. We see Chris Whipple out there. Hey, thanks for joining us, man. And
Buddy Hill, how you doing, buddy? Great to see you this morning.
And he's talking.
Darren, Corey Smith, we got.
What's up, bro?
Josh is rolling down the line here. I'm going to.
All right, I love this.
I'm going to take you a different direction.
Trees from the Arch Siding Place Cemetery.
There's Renee Bates.
I love this. I'm going to make a comment about this. 2014, the National Park Service removed 800 ash trees from the arch site and replaced them entirely with London plane trees they kept throughout the new expansion. Right now in Nashville, Tennessee, we've got the worst. We are losing sycamores and London planes at an alarming rate due to bacterial leaf scorch. In fact, we are losing them faster than we're losing ash trees right now. So I think that probably wasn't a very good choice for the National Park Service. So
they didn't
know.
Do their homework fully. Is
well,
what you're saying.
But I mean, I've
asked maybe they didn't have enough information.
And
to make
they
the
didn't
right.
have enough information. I've been asking our local, as I call them, the Alan Wyndham and Frank Hale team, and they
and between
seemed,
those guys, they know.
Yeah, but they were sort of hadn't caught on to it as much. And right now, I'm seeing a lot of dieback on, especially weeping cherries. They're just going like crazy, and I don't know what that is right now.
I think there are some issues that we saw a phenomenon that occurred last fall that really, I mean, greatly affected crepe myrtle. It also affected a lot of camassipras.
Yes, arborvitae,
it's the fact that we had really very warm weather on into early November. We had no cold weather at all. And then the first frost we had was not a frost at all. It was 17 degrees, and we had it two nights in a row.
Wow.
So all of the and then this spring, when things start leafing out early because we had warm weather, they got hammered twice again by late freezes. So I'm pretty convinced that the one in the fall is what did the most of the damage.
Well,
simply
so,
because
yeah.
the, you know, we've talked about it on here before that the plants are still actively growing. The cells are engorged with sap, and consequently they're very susceptible to freeze damage when that occurs.
Well, the cherries, this is just recently we're starting to see it, and you'll see it reminds me of the borers that happen on laurels.
Right.
Where you'll get this limb that dies, and then you got another limb that
dies. Well, of course, you know, they all are prunus.
They're all prunus, yeah.
So they're all in the same family, cherry trees and laurels, Autolucan laurels, skip laurels. They're all.
What about the Buffy laurels?
Not sure about that
Buffy,
one,
Buffy, come on. You got Skip. You have to have Buffy, don't you? 615-499-6690. Join us. Ask a question if you got a comment about what's going on.
I got another little pest issue here to run by you, Randall. And
right here?
No, boxwood blight.
Ooh.
Let's talk about that. While we're on touching
something. You're the expert on boxwood bite. I've heard you talk about it before. I have almost no boxwoods to deal with.
Except
Two Rivers Mansion. I have Two Rivers Mansion.
Yeah, and but it's a major thing, particularly for everyone in West Nashville has boxwood.
Yeah.
I think it's a law.
You must have.
Some have it to the extent of monoculture almost, where they have nothing else but boxwood.
And our dear departed sweet friend Doris,
she was the queen of boxwood. She made sure that we got boxwoods in Middle Tennessee, and she did a wonderful job of that.
She did a wonderful job of that.
However, and have nothing having to do with her is that a blight has occurred. It didn't start here. It just has spread to here. And this blight has gotten transplanted from, I don't know if it began in Connecticut or if it was in.
It's in English. I mean, they've been in England for a lot of years. They've been there a long time.
The one thing you can say for sure, if the English are real gardeners. Now, we're wannabes, sort of. They're real gardeners, and they've learned to deal with it. Some of it comes through a better cultivar selection, but most of it comes from better management habits, being very responsible about, you know, don't let your neighbor use your shears to trim theirs with, and if you do, you got to clean them with alcohol thoroughly on all sides of the blades. Make sure that it's completely sterilized before you use them. Don't let your landscaper pull the shears off the truck unless you see them cleaned in front of you, because they could have been, you know, four doors down and picked it up. Yeah, I think the state of Tennessee did a great job in getting ahead of the curve on problems regarding boxwood blight as far as putting regulations in place to ensure that the places they are being transported from into Tennessee, and Tennessee is maybe to the chagrin of many other growers, but Tennessee's right in the middle of the entire eastern United States, so almost everything has to pass through here, and a whole lot of it now stops here. So the state of Tennessee kind of set the standard for boxwood blight control and regulation within the industry of growers.
Sure.
But it's what we have to do here, for instance, we can't even have – you'll see boxwoods in five or six different places on our lot, some distance apart from each other. That's not because we don't understand it. It would be a lot easier to have all the boxwood together. The problem is if there was a issue with one of those plants from one of those growers, if you had them all together, we'd have to dump them all. So this way helps us to be able to control. And, you know, we've not had that occur, but it is a suggested point of prevention with respect to, if you got some grower that came in and unknowingly sent you plants that were infected, you would at least only have it, you know, in this one small group rather than all of them.
Did they limit any kind of order process? Did you have to order a certain amount from each of the growers, or was it just a supply and demand type of thing? Because it seems like to me that if you had one bad guy out there, which didn't we have a Christmas wreath thing came through here not too long?
Yeah, now that was out of the West Coast, was it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, an unscrupulous, it was a boxwood wreath. That's how they got spread. Right. Yeah, so it's coming back now.
Yeah,
coming back at you.
Yeah,
to a sense that even in the people that use pine needles for mulch, several years ago, I remember stories that the fire ants were getting transported up here with the pine.
This
needles.
Just in, fire ants have been here for a while.
Long time. Yeah,
so you know they ain't going anywhere.
Well, we've only been on the air since 1998.
Well before that, I promise you. Now a major introduction occurred when Cool Springs Mall was, because there was stuff brought in from all over the Deep South, and I mean that whole area, Brentwood and Williamson County, got covered up
in fire ants. Yeah,
so you know, there's introductions that occur like that.
And I'm going to be ugly.
Okay,
I like being ugly.
That's okay.
Ascend Amphitheater, what we refer to as West Riverfront Park, was done by that's what it's called. We call it Riverfront Parks. But anyway, it was planted, and it was a Georgia contractor did that, and that place is covered up with fire ants. So, I mean, for some reason, it was all about the budget. And so they brought in, but man, they are just covered us up. So we fight the fire ants down there all the time.
What do you do for?
We have a bad chemical we put on them. Okay. I don't even know its name. Don't ask me because I can't remember. But
restricted use pesticide.
It is a restricted use pesticide, yes.
All righty, folks. 615-499-6690.
Hey, let me quickly here, Josh, just for a moment, talk about this little company here called Bates Nursery and Garden
Center. It's a pretty nice place.
Well, we do work at trying to have a place that's friendly to shop and have a really excellent selection of plant material. And most importantly, I would suggest we have a staff of horticultural experts who can really answer your questions and deal with your unique landscape situation, no matter what that is. So if you bring in photographs or hopefully make a rough sketch on your smartphone or on your tablet, bring those in with you, and our landscape professionals can help you get the right plants in the right place the first time. That's the way we do it at Bates Nursery and Garden Center. I do a weekly newsletter, and this week I touched on bagworms, and we'll talk about that more here in a moment. But we've talked about...
we forgot to remind them last
week. Is there
anything
good out there?
Well, we're going to talk about it, but the thing of it is... We've got to be mindful of these things, and if you don't want to be caught unaware, you don't want to be one of those to say I didn't know.
Right.
We want you to know at Bates Nursery and Garden Center, and so we'll help you get all that figured out. Of course, we're a proud seller of Earth Mix Garden products, and invite you to come out and see us. We're open Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. till 4 p.m. So come out and see us, and. We've got a great selection. Our perennial area is stocked to the gills. We've got all kinds of ornamental grasses, tree shrubs, ground covers, you name it. Come see us, Bates Nursery and Garden Center.
Now, David, our endorsed candidate for the Board of Mayor and Alderman in Petersburg, Tennessee, has asked a question.
And that question is?
Well, and we cast the at-home show endorsement last week in your
absence. I saw that, yeah.
Okay, Chris had your proxy. He was kind of iffy. Now, are you going to be endorsing the yard boy for his in his endeavor to become an alderman in Petersburg, Tennessee?
I feel like it would be in the best interest of Petersburg if he won.
Yes, I do too. But he has actually asked a pretty legitimate question, and anybody who ever lived in Las Cruces, New Mexico would know the answer to this. But with the dust storm coming in and the rain at the same time, will we be experiencing a mudsoon?
A mudsoon. I don't think it's going to be that much, although it is literally millions of tons of dust. But it kind of evenly spreads out, you know. The
much of
South America in the Caribbean depend on this every year to replenish the nutrition that is lost in the rainforest and add material to the beaches in the Caribbean. So that's where that stuff comes from. It flies in. Look,
the Bahamas is basically built from this stuff, I believe, in a lot of ways.
Well,
now, what we referred to, or my dear and sainted father used to refer to them when we lived in Las Cruces, New Mexico, these dust storms were not unusual. I mean, it might have not always come from the Sahara, but when the wind blows out there, which it blows all the time, and you happen to have that rainstorm, he called it a... Well,
think about it, Josh. Be careful now. I don't know what your dad might have been calling for.
Yeah, I don't have a drop button here.
You don't have it?
No, I don't have a dumb button.
Okay, we can't put a pause. But if the word started with S and it ended with T and there were two letters in between the two of them.
That said hi.
Hi.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a Las Cruces high storm. Okay.
High storm. Okay. Yeah.
But it will blast the. Right. If we happen to get a big bad thunderstorm with a bunch of straight line winds or any kind of winds, it'll take the finish off of a car.
Well, I was going to say, so, with the humidity and everything too around here in the range, won't that help tamp that dust down?
I think
you're looking
just,
forward to at least
would
one
it wash the
sense.
Dirt off a car too?
It'll take
that myself.
It'll take the paint, but at the end of the day, I'm just looking for one or two good sunsets and some sunrises out of this.
Well, as the weather forecast currently shows us, it looks like that opportunity will best occur on Monday, depending on which forecast you want to believe or any of them. But just be on the lookout. Get up early and go to bed, you know, after sunset. And then you'll have a chance to see on a daily basis.
You got a chance.
That's right. Hey, let's talk about bagworms. Now, I know you don't have to deal with a lot of this in Metro Park. So, although you have Juniperus virginiana, also known as Eastern Red Cedar, which is a primary host right. of this.
Right.
The evergreen bagworms, or just bagworms, as everybody around here knows them, are
they're
a major,
brown, aren't they?
Well, as they get older, right now they're probably still going to look green because they're still very juvenile. And I'll put this little video up of I wrote an article this week. I touched on it a minute ago about the bagworms that I picked off of a single Hortzman Blue Atlas Cedar. Now, they look about like this. He said, but Hortzman's a little fatter. This is actually three regular Blue Atlas Cedars together to my right. But
gorgeous.
This is about that tall and about that big around, and I picked 400 off, and you had to look very carefully to be able to see them because they're very small right now. And
they're eating. Right now.
They're eating right now, and they're very easy to control if you do it right now. And you know,
we usually remind folks on the Father's Day edition of the At Home program.
Yeah, and I think we maybe touched on it, but it's not too late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is just the week after.
So. Oh, you know what I got for Father's Day present?
You're not changing the subject on me, are you?
No, not just a minute. But I just got to remind me to come back to this because I've got something. Okay, but
so anyway. Bagworms, it's a timely thing. If you've got conifers, you see what Josh has got behind him. There's a emerald arborvitae. These highlights, arborvitae, anything that is a conifer that has needles on it. Actually, if you've got a conifer that's badly loaded with them, they'll drop on to almost anything else in this. I've seen them eat hollies up. I've
Japanese
seen them,
maples.
Yes. So yeah. They're not attracted to them, but if there's something nearby, they'll attack them as well. So treat them now. There are any number of very safe products you can use because they're easy to control when they're young. But you wait a month from now, and it's a different story altogether. Randall talking about some much stronger pesticides that have to be used. You have to start bringing out that kind of stuff. So if you want to avoid that, do a preventive spray right now.
Yep.
You can use – there's a Captain Jack's which got spinosad in it. It's a microbial treatment for it. Does really well. You could probably even use insecticidal soap if you ride on it when they're really young. They may be too big at this point, but
it's going to have a picture of on the label of a little thing that looks like a little Christmas ornament, and that's the way that you tell what a bagworm is. It's not the big silky stuff that's in the trees later in the year. A bagworm is literally it's hanging from the tree, and
it's a worm in a bag. Like the sign says.
I need to say something here. I just thought when I said we're using the bad stuff, we do have people on staff, including me, who are pesticide certified. So we all go through the training. So we can't even buy that.
You don't want to put it on your French fries. You don't want to spray it on your dog.
And there's nothing else that we found that will take care of.
Yep.
And it does take quite a lot of effort to...
And continuing education.
And we go every year.
Is that a bunch of bagworms?
That's a bunch of bagworms.
Baby right bagworms.
615-499-6690.
That's actually about 400 right there. Uh-huh. That's how small those are. You can see them moving around.
Yeah.
Now, did you happen to set those on fire to get rid of them?
Yeah, I can neither confirm nor deny that, Josh.
But
you see, that's what they came off of right there. They came off of that Hortzman Blue Atlas Cedar right there, which is...
You have little children at your house, you can put a penny and a bounty on every one of them, and it costs you
$4 to get them off there, they don't miss any. But the point of this whole story was, and I will stop at that, I missed one bag the year before. I found one bag left from the year before that I just didn't see, and because of that, it absolutely.
It's a pretty tomato.
Yeah, it is a pretty tomato. That's not what we're going for here. So we'll switch that out. Anyway. YouTube doing for us what we can't do for ourselves. So.
Oh, my goodness. 615-499-6690.
When I was growing up in Kentucky, if we ever saw bagworms, we were always told to roast them.
Roast them, yeah.
You know, if they get a little bigger, they're good for stomping. They'll pop.
And they squish.
Yeah.
You can have bagworm wars. You can squirt them.
Yeah, they squish them out.
Yeah, they squish.
We never did that. We had Roman candle wars.
Yeah. Bottle Rocket Wars?
Yeah.
Okay.
With the PVC pipe rifles?
Well, yeah. Not that we were advertised, because
it's very dangerous.
Very dangerous. We don't
extremely
do this.
Dangerous.
But I want to say a personal thank you to, I was talking about my Father's Day present. I got a new blower motor on my air conditioner system last
Whoa.
Night.
Whoa,
really?
Yes,
really?
Yeah, yes, I did.
That's following
rather
the,
substantial
and that sentimental carry tradition, along with overseeding for Diana's birthday.
Well, it was a bit of a surprise. It was definitely a surprise when you wake up in the house at the proving grounds and everything was going on. But I want to send a personal thank you out to my friend Mike Allen from Allen's Air Care in Smyrna for coming out on a Sunday.
He came out on a Sunday?
Sunday morning they came out. He went to church first, and then he came over to the proving grounds and fixed us up.
You got to get it. You got to get the unit blessed before you can properly install
Mike's
it.
Mike's a good guy, man. I mean, I was just glad that he was going to make it at all, because it was hot last Sunday. I don't know if you noticed that, but
I did notice that.
But thank you once again, and hey, they're available for all of Rutherford County and Smyrna.
We did get a text message from Kay, by the way.
Yes. Okay.
She wanted to know, does the boxwood blight transfer to any other plants?
Other boxwood, and actually there are no, there may be some other hosts. I can't think of what they are right off the top of my head. There's
too bad it won't get privet.
Yes, that is too bad.
Or honeysuckle.
Yes. But no, but if there's really, there are strains of boxwood that are more resistant to it, but there are none that have total immunity towards it, so.
Going back to the emerald ash borer, I think there is some suggestion that the white fringe tree is also affected by the emerald ash borer. So I don't know how much Which that's out there.
And that is, of course, another native, the Chionanthus.
Yeah, the Chionanthus. So
now, what? I didn't hear the name.
It's Chionanthus virginicus. It's the white fringe tree, Grancy Graybeard.
Yep.
Grancy's Graybeard.
Grancy's Graybeard.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. That's another that is affected by the emerald ash borer.
No, I did not know that. Yeah.
And it may not be a huge, but it's been found on it. So.
Well, and probably due to the way they grow, of course, they are not a tree form plant. Typically, they're a multi-trunk.
Right.
It could even kill the trunks off, and it could shoot back out herbaceously from below the ground and still recover.
And cover,
it might not be the death knell to those, but it could certainly do damage to them.
So, but that's the only other one that I've heard of so far.
And it's just not, you know, if you had a choice between that and an ash tree and you're an emerald ash borer, you're probably going to choose
the ash tree.
Yes, of course you are.
Joyce has a question on the Facebook page,
okay.
Which, by the way, if you're out there, share that Facebook page. Start a watch party. She wants to know, what can you do about the white stuff that gets on the peonies and has gotten on her phlox?
Well, powdery mildew is what she's referring to. And
don't scratch it. Don't,
one thing,
don't,
the first don't, thing don't you scratch. Need to be able to do if you really want to take care of it is control the weather. Wouldn't that help a lot,
that
Randy?
That would have a lot,
reduce the humidity and don't let it rain and late in the day, you know, let it, because this is about moisture and available, having the right conditions. So where we live, perfect spot. High humidity, warm overnight temperatures. There's absolutely nothing naturally to dissuade them at all. Matter of fact, it's just perfect growing environment. So anything, lilacs are also badly affected by that. Many varieties are. You got to spray with the fungicide. Probably alternate with two different fungicides in order to get the best effect
out
of it.
Grapes would probably get powdery mildew.
Oh, yes.
Some kind of mildew.
Yeah.
Maybe it's
more on the fruit than on the foliage, but yes. So, and a lot of copper-based fungicides are used, and quite effectively. So, you just got to spray, but you got to time your spraying when the weather conditions are favorable. This may be difficult this coming week, depending on what the weather does. You may spray, and it may rain right after you do it, and you go, "Well, that was for nothing," which it was. You have to go back out there and spray again at your next opportunity.
Yeah, my wife wants me to stop and get some wheat flour on the way home, as well as a couple of pints of strawberries. But I've got that. You don't happen to have any wheat flour out here at the nursery?
I do not, Josh. Okay. Nope. Do not have that.
Oh my goodness gracious!
Has anybody failed trying to make sourdough starter? I failed miserably.
Really?
I don't know how you can fail, but I failed. I got tired.
I looked into it, and the thing is that I think we need to do that as a community.
I think you're right.
And get everybody in the neighborhood to start it all at once, because I believe it's like this creeping floxy or whatever powdery mildew stuff is. Once you start it, it just keeps going.
It goes.
And it grows and it grows.
But it said, start with wheat flour mixed with regular flour. Well, so I couldn't find wheat flour, so I went to Amazon and I bought what I thought was a little packet, and it came 5 pounds. So if anybody would like to have any rye flour, I have lots of
now,
rye
what
flour.
Were you able to find during the pandemic, were you able to find yeast?
No.
That was tough.
You couldn't find flour either for a long
correct.
Time. Yeah.
I got, when all that was going on in there, mm-hmm. having all the shortages, I bought the last 2 packets of yeast at the Kroger in Springfield. And literally, as I was walking away, someone else walked up and was looking for it. I was
He
went,
no, I didn't do that.
You did?
I left early because she looks stout.
These sourdough bread cultures have been kept alive for like more than a century.
Yeah,
in San Francisco, a lot of the sourdough bread is like the mother loaf that they keep. They always keep some, you know, behind.
The
it's
mother
like
what?
Mother loaf.
Mother loaf.
The mother loaf.
Or
that's
mother,
what it is.
The starter.
Basically. The starter, yeah. That's where they get it.
They have
the
a
culture
statue?
From.
I mean, do they?
They've got it. No, it's a controlled environment. And they've been doing that for 150 years.
So there's technically, they've been having this same batch of starter going for
that
long.
The same variety, yes. They claim to get a specific flavor profile.
No, well, the thing is, you know, you have to do these things and you put it in a warm environment. Well, the air conditioning's running, so I thought 75 degrees would be fine, but sometime it never did poof up like it was supposed to. I got tired of feeding it twice a day for a week and a half, and I went, enough of this.
You're going to eat it. Why do you have to feed it? I mean,
you have to feed it like a half a cup of flour. Throw out some, add some, throw out some, add. I'm not committed to that. That's a life form I don't need to deal with.
615-499-6690.
Hey, give a big shout out to my buddy down in Key West, Ralph Hall. Good morning, Ralph. And Steve Brumfield, thank you, buddy. Appreciate you sharing that out
there.
That's
the place to go see a sunset today. Go
out. It should be awesome in Key West.
I would
or
agree.
A sunrise, for that matter.
Because I've been on a clear day that if you go out on a Danger Charters tour, another great thing to do when you're in Key West, Florida. You can just look to the west and watch everything go down. But hopefully he'll send us some pictures of that. I would love to see something from down there at the southern border.
No doubt more will be revealed with respect to the dust. And we'll know more this time next week than we know now, because we will already be into the event.
Hopefully we won't get wind and rain at the same time, so we won't have one of Jack's high storms. Yeah.
Yeah, high storms. Yeah.
High storms. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. We're running out of time for this edition of the At Home Show. But folks, once again, please subscribe to the YouTube channel.
Don't do it for me, do it for Josh.
Do it for Michael. Okay.
Do it for Randall.
Do it for Nora. Actually, do it for Nora.
We have not acknowledged her presence today.
Here.
She's a little camera shy.
I think she should come on this.
But she does
come
a capable.
On. Come on.
And you haven't talked about the foliage at all today.
I'm sitting here and Menorah and Shasta daisies and yarrow and
bee-balm.
Bee-balm.
We've got bee-balm. We've got some Vitex right there in front. And
monk's pepper.
Yeah, and what you see over there to the extreme right is a chocolate fountain.
Mimosa.
Albizia. It is a mimosa, actually.
Yeah, yeah. No, we just don't say that because nobody wants to know that it's
No. It's not going to grow like the naturalized mimosas
it's
that
nice.
You see. But
what is the mature height on that?
But on, you know, if you don't stake
that label
them,
there,
if you don't stake them here, I don't think they'll probably get much more than about 15 feet tall, maybe 40 feet wide.
It's 15 to 20 feet tall.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Do you know the story about the Vitex? That's why it's called monk's pepper?
No, sir.
Maybe I shouldn't tell that.
No. It's also known as the chaste tree.
Supposedly, back in the early days, that the seeds are a little black, looks like pepper, and they would feed it to the monks because it controlled libido.
It was like an anti-aphrodisiac.
Why did you look up at that all of a sudden?
It was a chastity encouragement tool. So anyway, it is also known as a chaste tree.
It's not Saint Peter. It's saltpeter.
It's a different thing, but it has much the same.
That we don't need to go to here, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, next Saturday morning you can come in and join us live, right, David?
Ben? That's right. Hey, Gonzalo, good morning to you out there. You and Kayla out in Pacific Northwest, out in Seattle. So great to see you guys.
Share us out there as well. Hey, folks, if you have a business or you have a service that you would like to feature on the At Home Show, reach out to us at the phone number. If you have an opportunity for us to perhaps come into a radio station and have this product and this content come, you can reach out and contact to us as well, because we have we got the technology, we got the best producer in the business going on here right now. So
We've got Michael.
So we will make it happen. But if you've got something that you want to feature here on the At Home Show, we're glad to get you to going, and you can sit on the hot seat with us and come in and guest. Randall, thank you for joining
us. It's been fun. This is always great.
Thank you, buddy.
Great fun.
If we don't see you before, we'll know we'll see you by the time the Lawn and Garden Show rolls back around.
We hope.
We can do it virtually. Hey, we can do it virtually.
It's been teetering for decades, so, you know,
we wouldn't have it
any other way.
All righty, folks. For everybody here at the At Home Show crew, we encourage you to join us next Saturday morning, but you can look at us anytime you want to now that we're out there on YouTube.
Just replay it and subscribe.
And
if you can't sleep,
we're begging,
it'll help you go back.
All right, see you next Saturday morning for another hour of the At Home Show. See you then.